KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Oakland.
I'm from Cleveland Heights.
West Oakland, California.
Rome 58.
I actually don't live in Oakland. I live in Richmond.
Coming up, special permits are allowing cannabis consumption at music festivals in the Bay.
You can't consume in public, so that kind of leaves us in this weird space where you kind of have to carve out spaces, right?
Then, the man who helped develop San Francisco's Golden Gate Park may have been a tree hugger, but people, not so much.
Yeah, he was known to be a very cranky guy who loved park stewardship.
And we stumble upon one of the city's best-kept secrets, a thought-provoking trail in McLaren's namesake park.
Being out in a healthy environment is probably going to lead to healthier thoughts, wiser decisions, a better life.
Cross Currents is next. Marijuana and music festivals have gone together for a long time. Just think about the Summer of Love.
When the truth is wild, to the end.
Yeah, smoking up's part of the scene. But technically, it's been illegal to consume cannabis at California festivals until this year. Now that's changing. KALW's Ariella Markowitz reports.
So, if you haven't been to Outside Lands, the music festival held each August in Golden Gate Park, here's the rundown. The youth, with way better fashion taste than you, are paying $10 for boba tea. Their poor Instagram friends are hella jealous. But if you're over 21, you can go where the big kids are, in the woods, where a sweet, familiar smell awaits.
And then the Gary Ping, that one's going to be a really strong indica. That one's got that big maraschine, like terpene smell to it. You can really pick that up in there. This is the London Pound Cake. This one is like super sweet. It's one of my favorites.
I'm at a cannabis smelling station. A sales girl offers me and some others a sniff of curated premium marijuana.
Damn. Right? It like smacks you in the face.
No, it's on his face. Oh! That's what you're supposed to say. Ooh, snaps.
So good, right?
Last year at Outside Lands, you could smell, but not smoke. But this year, instead of sneaking off into the woods, for the first time, you can buy and smoke cannabis, legally, in the cannabis area called Grasslands. It looks like a beer garden. A bunch of colorful booths are shaded by redwoods, and folks hang out in a rustic platform area. But instead of drinking, they're smoking, vaping, or nibbling on cannabis products. Jordan Lambs, the founder and CEO of the dabs retailer Moxie, hopes this is the new normal.
It should be together. There's no reason for it not to be. I mean, they're selling alcohol. Why not cannabis?
Lamb's products are bought and consumed right here thanks to a special events permit that was issued by the city of San Francisco. In fact, the permit was approved in nail-biting 3 days before the event. But he wasn't nervous.
You know, I always had confidence that it was going to be approved.
Marissa Rodriguez didn't share that confidence.
Yeah, right. Everyone was on pins and needles. I didn't know it would.
Rodriguez has a warm smile to go with that great laugh. We're sitting in the basement of City Hall in what used to be a closet. For nearly 2 years, it's been home to San Francisco's Office of Cannabis. Any budding industry needs its regulators, and as head of the Office of Cannabis, Rodriguez does a little bit of everything.
Yeah, we process all of the permits for the sale, manufacture, distribution, cultivation, and any lab testing, as well as retail. And so, you know, Grasslands is the first event to be able to be permitted in San Francisco.
Rodriguez worked as a prosecutor in San Francisco for 10 years. She jokes that her time at the DA prepared her for the legal Wild West that is cannabis permitting. She just stepped in to head the cannabis department on April 1st.
You know, a month in cannabis land is a year. You know, it's like, feels like a long time, but it really hasn't been.
Recreational cannabis became legal in California back in 2016. And 1 year later, recreational dispensaries started popping up. But San Francisco laws are still really strict about where you can actually consume cannabis.
The thing about cannabis that makes it unique is that you can't consume in public. You can't consume in your home if you're a renter and your landlord doesn't allow you to. You can't consume in your car. You can't consume in a hotel if you're a tourist. You really can't find a place
to consume. And so that kind of leaves us in this weird space where you kind of have to carve out spaces, right?
Then in 2018, California passed AB 2020, which allows cannabis consumption at public events, but only temporarily and if the event passes a certain set of guidelines.
Like, what were the boxes that had to be checked for that to happen?
Yeah, okay, many. Many boxes.
The city requires security to be tight, which means 8-foot-tall opaque fences and guards at every entrance. And a place far enough apart from the main event so secondhand smoke won't bother folks not partaking. That actually ended up working really well for Outside Lands because Golden Gate Park has a forest. Street festivals with lots of residential areas are going to have a much harder time finding a place out of the way.
Fortunately for the Folsom Street Fair, its location is in an area where there are a lot of, you know, industrial type buildings and not a lot of residents. So they're able to find, you know, an alley or a street that's separate.
Rodriguez says that Folsom Street Fair, the city's iconic festival celebrating BDSM and leather fetishism, is the next event in line to get a cannabis permit. Other events, like the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival, didn't apply early enough, so they won't have time to go through the long process to secure the event's permit.
It's a huge commitment. It's not really easy fly-by-night thing.
Rodriguez is concerned that the time and resources you need to get an events permit make it inaccessible for low-income retailers and low-key events. She says her office is working hard to lower the barriers to enter the industry by helping less wealthy and ex-incarcerated folks find work at cannabis events. But that's hard to do when the federal government classifies marijuana as a Schedule I drug. Her office is operating in unstable legal territory, but Rodriguez is really excited to be figuring out the gray area.
And so here we are, and we're doing it, and that's the exciting part. And so as long as we're moving forward, I'm excited, and I think everyone in the industry is.
So let's clear this up. Outside Lands wasn't the first permitted cannabis event in California. The first permitted event ever was in Sacramento for the High Times Cannabis Cup in May of 2018. Fun fact, Lauryn Hill performed at it. Northern Nights in Humboldt County came a year later, and it was the first festival focused on music, not cannabis. But Outside Lands was the first music festival in the Bay Area. I tried to figure out exactly how much money the Grasslands area made, but Highland Events, the guys that organized it, said the information is protected by a non-disclosure agreement, and Rodriguez also didn't know the cash number. But folks definitely celebrated San Francisco's historic cannabis space the American way, by spending money.
See, people are obviously very excited.
Love this! It's unreal!
Jordan Lambs, the DAB CEO you heard from earlier, feels that even though marijuana legislation has a long way to go before things feel like normal, he can still enjoy the moment.
I mean, the more we can make it feel like just normal life, which it is, and it's safe, the better. And we'll get there, but it's baby steps. At the end of the day, my favorite saying in this space is you can't sacrifice the good for perfect. Perfect doesn't exist, and good's good.
Even though the Folsom Street Fair didn't go through with the cannabis permit, keep your eyes out for more events. Oakland just released its online form for permits, and 420 on Hippie Hill could even be a legal endeavor. In San Francisco, I'm Ariella Markowitz for Cross Currents.
Soothe me with your caress, sweet marijuana. Marijuana.
Ariella made that story as part of our summer journalism training program.
Help me in my distress, sweet marijuana. Please do. Now you alone can bring my lover back to me.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney in for Hannah Baba. So Outside Lands takes place in Golden Gate Park. It's San Francisco's largest park. What's the second largest? If you guessed McLaren Park, nice job. You really know the city. But if you didn't know, it's no surprise, even though McLaren Park's really big. So why don't more people know about it? And why is it called McLaren Park anyway? So many questions. Stephen Short has the answers.
Don't take this the wrong way, Golden Gate Park, but Phil Ginsberg...
I'm the general manager of San Francisco's Recreation and Park Department.
Phil Ginsberg sounds as if he might like another city park better.
You know, Golden Gate Park gets the attention, but McLaren Park is really an incredible jewel, and it's not just a neighborhood park. I think of it as more of a regional asset.
Like a good parent, Ginsberg tries not to have favorites. Still,
very few cities in America are blessed to have a park like McLaren Park within its boundaries because of its topography and not just its size.
That size, by the way, at just over 300 acres, is a little less than one-third of the size of Golden Gate Park.
It's hilly, it's natural, it has some incredible recreation. It's really got a little bit of everything for everyone.
So, fittingly, it's named for San Francisco's long-serving superintendent of parks, John McLaren. But if it's so great, then why isn't it better known? You know what they say about real estate. It's all about location.
Particularly at a time before our mass transit system, has become as robust as it is. And, you know, maybe even going back historically, a time before there were that many cars in San Francisco, it was far.
And tucked down in the southeast corner of the city, it's still far, unless you happen to live nearby, even with our robust mass transit system. But did he say going back historically? Well, let's just do that.
McLaren Park was actually originally the home to the Ohlone Indians.
And if you'd been around then, you would have seen why. This is not the part of the San Francisco Peninsula to the northwest, which was made up of sand dunes.
You would have seen incredible habitat. You would have seen a big variety of plants and mushrooms and insects and animals. It was the wild.
Wild habitat is great for mushrooms and insects, but few people wanted to build houses there. So after several land deals, the city decreed in 1928 that this area should be a public park. And they had just the right man to transform it into what Ginsberg calls an incredible jewel.
John McLaren was a Scottish gardener and was really responsible with William Hammond Hall for the creation of Golden Gate Park first, and then ultimately our entire park system. And he was our first superintendent. He actually was a superintendent for over 50 years.
Over 50 years?
And actually, our city forefathers gave him a lifetime appointment to be superintendent.
They also doubled his salary when he was 70, and he lived in what is now the park headquarters until his death. That building in Golden Gate Park is now known as McLaren Lodge.
And he actually continued to serve until his death when he was 96. And his body laid in state in the City Hall Rotunda. I doubt very few bureaucrats today, including me, would get that honor.
One reason he may have served so long was because people actually feared him. Published reports say his gardeners gave a coded warning when McLaren was spotted coming their way.
Hey, Joe, there's wild game coming.
Yeah, he was known to be a very tough disciplinarian. He was, frankly, known to be a pretty cantankerous and cranky guy who loved park stewardship.
Ginsberg says it's thanks to McLaren's stubbornness and determination that we even have Golden Gate Park today. William Hammond Hall designed it, but it was McLaren who was really responsible
for taking what is nothing but beach, or was nothing but beach, and converting it into this just oasis of open space and flora and fauna that we have today.
All of this devotion to urban open space would be reason enough to honor this man by naming a park for him. But consider this.
John McLaren was actually credited with planting over 2 million trees, which is pretty remarkable in and of itself.
A statue of McLaren was made during his lifetime, but he wouldn't allow it to be installed. It wasn't necessarily due to modesty. Ginsberg says he just hated statues in parks.
He also hated keep-off-the-grass signs. He felt nobody should be told to stay off the grass.
But he wasn't a mean old taskmaster to everybody.
He was known for standing outside McLaren Lodge on Sundays, and he would give out candy to kids as they came into the park. So although he was known to be a rather gruff fellow, it is clear that he had a very soft heart.
providing the kids put any wrappers in the trash cans. John McLaren's influence over Golden Gate Park and the other 219 parks in the San Francisco system is still felt by those in charge today. Sometimes, Ginsberg says, that influence is almost physically tangible.
We have a big portrait of him that sits in the commission room here at McLaren Lodge. And while we are all there and he's having staff meetings and he's looking over us, I think we all still feel a certain sense of awe to be in his presence. And he's basically looking down at us saying, don't screw up my park.
Well, now here's the question. First, you said he was looking over you. Then you said he was looking down on you. Which is he doing?
He's definitely looking down at us. There's no question about it.
In San Francisco, I'm Stephen Short for Cross Currents.
Nicholas Monsma helped with that story. This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney in for Hana Baba. Over the years, McLaren Park has yo-yoed between ambitious improvement projects and periods of neglect. At one point, it even became a dumping ground for unwanted bathtubs, carpets, furniture, and worse, bodies. Yep. But back in 2009, Rec and Parks partnered with both the city's utilities and Arts Commission to clean things up. They launched a project to make the park feel safer, more inviting, and even thoughtful. What I'm talking about is a nearly 3-mile trail that pairs walking with philosophy. In this story from our archives, Berenice Freedom put on her hiking boots to find out how an ancient Socratic practice changed McLaren's reputation.
I'm in McLaren Park, hiking south on a trail that follows the ridge of a grassy hill. To my left is a stunning view of Visitation Valley's row houses, painted orange and blue and pastel pink. SFO is just 10 miles south, so every few minutes the shadow of an airplane will bend across the grassy hills of San Bruno Mountain or drift across 10 lanes of cars surging along the 101. The trail I'm on is called the Philosopher's Way. It's designed to help visitors connect to nature and to think about the landscape, but also about the people who came here before them or about those who will come in the future. There are 14 musing stations, each with a black stone plaque that provides historical context and quotes from luminaries and make this an art project, not just a hiking trail. Here's a quote from one of them.
The butterfly counts not months, but moments, and has time enough.
The idea of a philosopher's walk isn't new. The project was modeled after similar walks in Japan, Europe, and Canada, but it is the first of its kind in the United States. Two artists created this project, Susan Swartzenberg and Peter Richards. They'd made several trips out here to figure out what kind of public art would have the most impact. Richards got the idea to do a walk when he came out early one morning and encountered a ghostly figure pacing in the forest.
Through the fog, I see this elderly Asian man who's kind of walking back and forth, and he's chanting through something pretty heavy, but it was a haunting image.
It got the artist talking about Socrates and Kitaro Nishida and other philosophers who would pair walking and thinking.
There is a kind of learning that's about walking.
That's co-creator Susan Swartzenberg.
Often philosophers would take their students on this walk up into the hills and talk and reflect to give a little piece of that thinking to San Francisco. It seemed like a wonderful way to name this.
McLaren was always known as a scary place.
The artists observed that people who lived close by only visited their own small section of the park, partly because there was no easy way to explore all of it. The Philosopher's Way tried to fix that.
We realized that if we could just connect the different pathways, people could go all the way around the park. And I think there was a little contention from people about not wanting to wander out of their own zone where they felt safe. So I think that we were able to open that up so that now you do see people, you know, circumnavigating the whole park.
This wasn't the first time these artists have worked together. They were longtime collaborators at the Exploratorium. Separately, they've created a lot of public art. Richards created an acoustic sculpture called the Wave Organ in the marina, and Schwarzenberg designed the Rosie the Riveter Memorial in Richmond. After so much experience, the artist knew it can be a struggle to get community buy-in on public art. Richards explains that he and Schwarzenberg made sure people in the surrounding areas were a crucial part of creating this art trail.
Instead of feeling defensive and like we're intruders, which can often happen when you're doing public art, we felt like we joined a community, and Susan was particularly good at meeting with groups and getting them to talk about what was important, and that those conversations are reflected in some of the musing stations.
The musing stations are etched with information about their location, so you can ponder the view and a memory from a local resident. My favorite musing station overlooks the Cow Palace. It's incredibly moving, partly because it has no words. You come out of the woods, and there is George Conklin's stunning black and white photograph of Martin Luther King speaking to a packed audience in the Cow Palace in 1964. It's a vivid reminder of how much has happened here over the years.
I don't really think that Californians in general have a very deep sense of history because everything's so new here. And so every little bit that we can hold on to, I think, is very important.
That's Ruth Wallace, a community advocate and bird watcher who brings all of her out-of-town guests to the park. She walks her dogs here daily.
In the early morning, we see quite a lot of wildlife, coyotes for sure, and of course raccoons, opossums, skunks. It's really a fun place to be every day. It gives you a little taste of nature to start the day.
Wallace has lived next door to McLaren Park for 14 years. She's been on the board of the Portola Neighborhood Association since 2009. That's also when Rec and Park joined forces with Public Utilities and the San Francisco Arts Commission to put a call out for ideas for a public art installation for McLaren Park. Once they had whittled down all the entries to three finalists, they asked the neighbors to pick a winner. Ruth Wallace had a vote.
I didn't actually vote on this one. I was hoping for something more sculptural, but I'm so happy with this, and I'm glad that my neighbors made this decision for me.
Local philosopher Nathaniel Paluga says he was also happy with that decision. He felt like the artist read his mind when they put in the Philosopher's Way Trail, since he was already using the place for physical and mental exercise.
The mind is connected to the body, and being in a healthy environment for the body leads to a healthy mind as well.
When Paluga isn't conducting tours of the Hate with SF City Guides, he'll lead discussion walks here on the way, posing questions from the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy. Paluga says that the experience of walking while talking about philosophical concepts can help people be more aware of the world around them, but also the world within them.
In between the talking, we'll walk silently for a bit, and then we can take in a more ineffable state and sort of breathe the fresh air, take in the sunlight, and be here now.
On the hike today, I've passed families having parties and cookouts. I saw butterflies and accidentally spooked some ducks, and I stopped to enjoy my share of four-legged affection. I also got unique views of the city, both physically and throughout time. For me, exploring McLaren Park was time well spent today. What I found was a calmness of body and mind after a thoughtful, even soulful experience of San Francisco. For Cross Currents, I'm Berenice Freedom.
My walking shoes on. I can't tell you where I'm going, but I'm walking down this lonely road. But at least the scenery is beautiful.
Find out more info about McLaren Park and the Philosopher's Way at KALW. And go ahead and subscribe to our podcast so you can hear stories about the Bay Area whenever and wherever you want.
It's not always about knowing why. Sometimes it's all about knowing what, and that's enough to keep you walking every day. Yeah, I believe.
The Cross Currents team includes Shireen Adel, Imran Ali Malik, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, True Quinn, and Joshua Sorodiak. Our engineers are James Rowlands, Tarek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Kristen McCandless. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.